We begin the current daf in Seftes Gittin daf Mem Hei. We begin 6 lines down for the top of the Yomid, where the Gemara continues the discussion with the previous daf. And that is regarding the halacha that we had mentioned in the previous Mishnah. If someone is Meicher Avdei L'chutz Laretz, we said that just like if you sell your slave to a non-Jew, he goes free, so too if you sell him out of Eretz Yisrael, where he can't live optimal regarding the halachas that he has as this quasi-Jew, which is fulfilling all the mitzvahs as a woman does, leaving Eretz Yisrael leaves some of that Kedusha, therefore he goes out free. Now, Ravanan had quoted the name of Shmuel that regarding two halachas, that the sale is like voided, which is the halacha over here, where although it was sold to Chutz Laretz, but the slave goes free. And another halacha, which is if someone buys a field from someone else during the Yevil year, they're also, although you're buying it, but the sale is voided because the field can't be sold during the Yevil year. Now, but he said he didn't know which one was the one that Shmuel had said that the purchaser, the consumer, loses his money, and which one does he not? Which Rav Yosef proved from a brisa, which we said clearly that regarding the sale of a slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, he goes free. That's the knas of the Chachamim. But additionally, it says he needs to get shichur. He has to ultimately be emancipated, although the monetary the rabbis are able to remove. But regarding prohibitory law of his status of a slave, his master has to free him. It says that Rabbi Sheni, meaning his second master, the purchaser who lives in Chutz Laretz, has to free him. So Rav Yosef proved, obviously that was the halacha that Shmuel had said, that the lekeach loses his money because he's the one left holding the bag, because we see that you're the master, you have to free him. What do you mean I'm the master? Yeah, because you bought him. The money is by the seller. He gets to keep the money and you lose the money. And the case by buying the field in Yovel is where he says, Ein mechur kaliker, he gets his money back. It's not a sale at all. That's how Rabbi Yosef resolved the two halachas of Shmuel and proved it by being medayik from the brisa. That's where our Gemara continues. Amalei Abaye Rabbi Yosef. Abaye says to Rabbi Yosef, regarding your inference from the brisa to prove this halacha of Shmuel, that when a meicher sells an eved from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, what happens is that who ultimately is the knas affecting? Not the meicher, he gets to keep the money. It's the lekiach who gets penalized. So the question Abaye asked to Rabbi Yosef is, my chazes, where did you see fit by the sale of a slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, the kansina lelekeach, why specifically penalize the consumer, the purchaser, nipnasei lemeicher? You should penalize the seller. He's the one that started this whole thing by selling his slave down as to Chutz Laretz. Why does he get to keep the money and he doesn't lose anything and the lekeach is the one that gets lost? So Amalei Rav Yosef responded to Abaye. He says, look, and he said to him in a mashal, he says, lavach bara ganav. The mouse is not the one who steals the food, those foods that you leave on the table or on the floor. Elochura. It's the hole in the wall which the mouse goes into with the food to get away from those who are chasing the mouse. That's what ganav. It's the hole who steals the food. In other words, he was telling him, it's the purchaser who's allowing the seller to sell who's ultimately the one that's stealing, that's doing the problem. Just like the mouse is not stealing the food because if he had nowhere to run, he'd be stuck. And the one who lets him get away with the stuff is the hole, and the hole is the one that's creating the problem. So too, the purchaser who's allowing the seller to violate the halacha of selling a slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz, he's the one that gets penalized. Now, so Amalei, Abaye said, what do you mean? I could tell the same thing the other way around. Ilav achbaro, if not for the mouse, chur menolei, how exactly would the hole be able to steal food? The hole is an inanimate object, it can't steal. The mouse is what caused the food to end up over there. So then why don't you penalize the mouse? In other words, the meicher, and you're only penalizing the whole. In other words, the consumer. So that Rav Yosef answers, it says, Mistabra, it's logical to say, Heicha de ikka isura, where the iser is right now, in other words, right now, where's the slave? We say he goes free. Right now, he's in the hands of the purchaser. Hasam kantina, that's where we apply the penalty. You're right. Could be based on the svar that I said of the mashal of the analogy, both the mouse and the hole are doing problems. But right now, where is it? It's in the hole. It's in the by the consumer. So therefore, we say, you got to let him go free. Well, what do you mean? He has my money. What do you want from us? You did this wrong thing, and you're the one you're holding the bag. Therefore, we let the slave go free, and it's the lekeach that ends up losing. And that's why the knas applies to lekeach and not to the meicher. Now, the Gemara brings the following incident relating to these halachas. Hahu avda de arak mechutza la'aretz la'aretz. There was a certain slave that fled from his master, who lived in Chutz La'aretz, and he fled to Eretz Yisrael. So Azal Mari Abasri, the master of this slave, furious. He wants to get his slave back, force him to come back home to Chutz Laretz. So Asla Kamed Rabami. So he came in front of Rabami. Amalei, so Rabami said to this master, to this lord, says, look, Nichtav Loch Shtar Adami. What we'll do for you, we'll concede, we'll meet you halfway. We'll write you a document regarding the value of that slave, and he'll pay you back his value. But because of Lekit Dechiru, so you have to write from a document of emancipation, let him go free. And said Rabami, V'iloy, if you're not agreeing to this compromise, Mafakna Le Minach, I'm going to totally remove him from you, and you're going to lose even his value, Midirab Achir Reb Isha, from the halacha of Reb Achir, the son of Reb Isha. To sound like Linda Brysa, which his interpretation is introduced over here, which also, the reason why we're introducing this, because one of the opinions here also purport to interpret from the pasuk that he learns it from, this halacha that we're discussing of selling an Eved from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. The Brysa says as follows. This is based on the pasuk in Shemais, which discusses the Shiva Umais, the seven nations that inhabited Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Canaan, before the Jewish people came. So Hashem tells the Jewish people in Sefer Shemais, Lo Yeshu Ba'artzecha, you're not allowed to let these Shiva Umais, these seven nations, remain with you in the land of Eretz Yisrael. Penyachti Oisachli V'gaymer, maybe they're going to cause you to sin against me, etc. Now, says the Tanakama of this Brysa, you would think that who's the pasuk referring to when it tells you that you're not allowed to allow the seven nations to remain with you, that it's even talking about a non-Jew that's willing to accept upon himself not to worship idols anymore. But still, no, you're not allowed to let them stay. Tamalayim, that's what Tanakama says. No, the pasuk teaches in Devarim, it says, Leisaskir Eved El Adonav, which literally means to say, and that's up for contention about how you interpret this pasuk. It means, the word hesker means of locking up. You can't hold up a slave to his master, which the Tanakhama is interpreting that do not remove this non-Jew from amongst you to return him to his idols. Meaning to say, don't take this person and lock him up to his master, who up until now were his idols, who he's running to save himself to you from his masters. So, therefore, he wants to remain with you. He's saying, okay, you know what, Jewish people, you're coming? I'm going to stop doing my idols. So, you would think that's what the pasuk say, that the pasuk would tell you can't keep these non-Jews who want to stop worshiping idols. And then we say that, no, the pasuk is telling you clearly don't get rid of him. Rather, my takanase, what is the rectification of that type of a non-Jew? That's what the pasuk continues afterward, where it says, "Imcha yesha bekirbucha v'gaymer," that he should dwell with you amongst you. And that is, although we were told to get rid of the seven nations, that's only if they're continuing in their despicable ways. But if they're willing to care about the world and the Hashem who created the world and not to worship idols anymore, then that's what the pasuk is teaching you in Leisaskir Eved El Adonav. Don't lock him up to his master. Don't send him back to his idols. Keep him amongst you in the land of Eretz Yisrael. That's the Tanakhama's interpretation. Now, v'kasha le Rabbi Yishya. Rabbi Yishya was bothered with this interpretation. Hai me'im adoinav? That the words that are used in the pasuk, that leisaskir eved el adoinav, and asher yotze lecho me'im adoinav, that he's running to save himself to you from his masters. Me'im aviv mi'bayle. It should have said from his fathers, from the ways of his fathers of worshipping idols, or as actually the other girsai say, where me'im elohav, from his gods. That's what it should have said. According to your interpretation, that it means to say that he's running away from his idols, so hold on to him. Don't send him away and get rid of him so that he goes back to his idols. Why would it say Mi'ma Daina from his masters? It should talk about Aviv, of Elohav. So Elohim Rabbi Yishai rather gives a different interpretation than Pasuk. Nothing to do with, like the Tanakhama said, about the Shiva Umais, about if they want to keep the mitzvahs, then they could, if they want to not do Avodah Zarah anymore, then they could stay in the land. A different halacha. It says, what the Pasuk is talking about is, and that's why we're introducing this story, because this middle opinion, Reb Oishia, which is not what was being referenced, but rather the next opinion was what Reb Ami was referencing, but this is what we were discussing in our previous sugyas, which he says that this pasuk is coming to teach regarding someone who sells his slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz. And the pasuk is warning the courts that if someone sells his slave from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz La'aretz, that when it says, Leisaskir Eved El Adonav, don't lock up the slave to his new master, meaning to his loikach, to the purchaser. Rather, you should force him to let him go free. Which again, that's what Rebbe Yishai is bringing from this pasuk, which is the source for the halacha that we mentioned about when it's sold from Eretz to Chutz Laretz, that you don't let him stay locked up from his master, rather you let him go free. Now, on this second interpretation, was Rekashle Reb Achi Reb Isha. So Reb Achi, the son of Reb Isha, he was bothered with this interpretation. He said, Hai Asher Yunotzel Elecha, the words that the Pasuk uses that he's Yunotzel to you, but Asher Yunotzel Me'imach Mi'boyle, to the contrary, and because he's learning the word Yunotzel, not as saving, but rather as the Pasuk says in Bereishis Lamed Aleph, Asher Hitzel Elehim Me'avinu, which is a word of separating. Mean to say, if you're saying that it's a slave that's being sold from Eretz Yisrael, meaning he's separating from you, and he's being sold to Chutz Laretz, so it shouldn't say that he was Yinotzel Elecha, rather it should say Asher Yinotzel Me'imach. He's not being separated to you, rather he's being separated from you, if it's talking about from Eretz Yisrael to Chutz Laretz. So Ela Amar Reb Achim Reb Isha, he gives a different interpretation. He says it's Be'eved Shebarach Mechutz Laretz, which was exactly the case that was with this person, which is what Reb Ami is referencing. And he says, if you're not willing to do this compromise about at least getting his value but freeing him, I'm going to force you to free him and you're not going to get anything, because of Reb Acher Reb Ish's opinion interpreting this pasuk, which is talking about a slave that fled from his master in Chutz La'aretz, La'aretz Eretz Yisrael, that's what Akasim Adaba. That's what the pasuk is talking about. And that's why it says, Asher Yinotzel Elecha, that when the slave is separated to you, meaning to say he ran to Eretz Yisrael, then Lo Yisasker Ever L'Adonav, don't send him back to his master, don't lock him up to his master in Chutz La'aretz, rather let him stay in Eretz Yisrael, and that's exactly what was with the incident. Rabbah, I mean, that's what he was saying, look, take our deal, because if not, you're losing everything, because according to Rabbi Achia, Rabbi Isha's interpretation, you lost it once he flees from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael. Now, Tani Yidek, we learn another b'ris, a different interpretation in this pasuk. Says Leisasker Eved Al Adoinav, again, which literally means say you shouldn't lock up a slave to his master. So Rebbe, I mean, he says it's talking about Lekech Eved Amanas LeShachar Akasam Daba. The pasuk is talking about when the person purchased the slave with the intention to free him. So the Torah is warning the courts that they should force this purchaser, this consumer, to free him, because that was the agreement that was made beforehand that he's going to free him. Now the Gemara is Heichadam. What would this case be talking about? So Amr of Nachman Yitzchak, he says, the custom lehachitz, that where the purchaser of the slave had written to the slave beforehand, and he wrote to him, look, l'kashek kachacha, when I'm going to buy you, hare asmucha konu lach me'achshav, then you're going to have acquired yourself from now, meaning I'm giving yourself back to you, although I'm not your owner yet, but when I own you, you're going to be acquired from me from now, which is retroactive, which is... That's a retroactive shichur, which actually the Gemara Masechet Yevamot of Tzad Gimel Amud Beis learns from this halacha of Rebbe that he must hold like Reb Meir, who holds that a person could be makna dover shaloi bala olam. You could acquire something that has not yet even entered into the world, which was the same thing over here. He doesn't own him yet, and yet he's freeing him retroactively from now because he could be makna to the slave something that didn't come yet, which will come, which is that he will buy him, and then he's retroactively freed from now. That's a different interpretation of Leisasker Ever L'Adoinav, although he is his Adon, don't let him stay locked up by him because he had already guaranteed that he's going to free him. Now, regarding this interpretation of this pasuk, which we had four different interpretations, the Gemara brings the following incident. Rav Chisda orikli avdu lebekitoy. Rav Chisda had a slave that fled from where Rav Chisda lives in Bavel to Bekitoy, which was where the Kutim were, the Kutim, which was also in Chutz La'aretz. So Shalach Lehu, he sent to them, Hadru and Ha'ali, send my slave back to me. Shalchulei, so the people from Beikutei sent him, Loisasker Ever L'Adoinav. The pasuk says, don't lock up a slave to his master. If he runs away, we can't send him back to you. So Shalchulehu, Rav Chisda sent back to them, but there's a pasuk in Devarim that says, regarding if someone has a lost object, that you have to return it to him, v'chintasel l'chamor, so too you should do for his donkey, v'chintasel l'simlasei, so too should you do for his clothing, v'chintasel l'cholaveit ezachicha, so too should you do for all the lost objects of your brother. This is my lost object, return my slave. So again, Shalchulei, they sent back to him, V'oksiv leisasker Ever L'Adoinav, but the pasuk says, and they're very literal in their definition, the Kutayim, they don't hold to the Midrashim, the rabbinic interpretation of the pasuk, says, if a slave runs away, you can't lock him up to send him back to his master. So Shalchulehu, Rav Chisda, sent back to them, Hahu be'eved shebarach mechutz la'aretz la'aretz. That pasuk is only talking about when the slave runs away from Chutz La'aretz to Eretz Yisrael, Because even if you're going to give a little interpretation of the pasuk, it says Eilecha, which is to you. What's to you? To Eretz Yisrael. Then, but here he's running away to Beit Kutai. It's still in Chutz Laaretz. There's no reason why you wouldn't be able to return my slave to me. So therefore, that was his opening for them to return the slave. Now the Gemara wonders, Umayshna de Shalach Lehu. Why did Rav Chisda specifically send back? We had four interpretations in that pasuk. Why did he specifically send back Kedreb Acher Reb Eishah, like his interpretation of the pasuk? So the Gemara says, Mishum de Mashm Lehu Kroy, because the literal reading of the pasuk sounds like his interpretation. Now, the Kutayim, as we said before, they don't listen to the words of the sages for their drashas. And therefore, he didn't want to send back like Rebbe's interpretation, which is, you don't see that in the literal reading of the pasuk that is talking about when he was buying him Amanas L'Shacharai, and then you can't be Saskri Eved Al Doinam. And then he sent him like that, which makes sense. Oh, it's true. Wow, he's right. It says, Eilecha, which is to you in Eretz Yisrael. That's when the slave runs away, then you can't return him. But since here we're both in Chutz Laaretz, you could send me back, my slave. Now, a similar incident where Abaya, Irkis Lechamer Bekutai, he lost his donkey in Bekutai. So Shalch Lehu, he said to them, look, when you find him, Shadruli, send him back to me. So Shalch Lehu, they sent him, Shalach Simon, you have to give a simon, a sign identifying that it's your donkey. So Shalch Lehu, he sent to them, the Chivre Krese, its stomach, its belly is white. So Shalch Lehu, they sent back to him, Ilav de Nachmaniat, if not for the fact that you were Abaya, who his name was Nachmeni, where, in other words, what they were trying to say was, if not for the fact that we recognize, we know you, the great Abaya, that you're a pious person and you wouldn't lie, for the simon that you're giving us, we wouldn't send you back your donkey. What, you think not all donkeys have a white belly? What are you telling us, that he has a white belly? Okay, but we know that you don't lie, so we're going to send you back the donkey, but if not, we wouldn't send you back the donkey. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing the theme of the previous Mishnahs, regarding Tikkun Olam, regarding rabbinic injunctions because of the rectification of worldly affairs. So the Mishnah says, "Ein paidin es hashvuyin yeser akadei deman." A person is not allowed to redeem captives more than the value of the people. Memnei Tikkun Olam, because the rectification of the world, again, if you're going to pay inflated prices, it's going to cause a major trouble for everyone in the world. Now, the aim of Rikhanasashwin, moreover, you can't even help the captives escape from captivity, meaning you have to negotiate, you can't just help them escape. Mimne Tikkun Olam, that's also because of the rectification of the world. Reb Shimon Gamlielam, he gives a different slant to it. He says, Mimne Takonas Hashvuyin, because of the rectification of the captives themselves that are left over, as the Gemara will explain what's the difference between the Tanakhama's interpretation and Reb Shimon Gamliel's interpretation. Now, the Gemara first asks, as we said, the halacha, that you're not allowed to redeem captives more than their value because of tikkun ha'olam. So the Gemara asks Ibailu the following question. Hai memnei tikkun ha'olam. This because of the rectification of the world that we shouldn't pay inflated prices to redeem captives. What is the tikkun ha'olam? Mishum duchka de tziburhu. Is it because of the pressing nature that it's going to affect on the tzibur, on the public, where we can't press them because it's going to cause the people to come to poverty if they're going to have to pay inflated prices for all the captives. So because of Tikkun Olam, we don't agree to redeem them for more than their value. Aydim, or maybe that's not the reason. Rather, Mishum Deloy Ligrivu. We don't want that the captors, these non-Jews, should get greedy and really put themselves out there, Velesi Tvei, and to go ahead and get more captives because they see, whoa, this is definitely a worthy proposition. Look how much money we get for every captive. And maybe that's the reason why we shouldn't pay more. Now, the difference of those two options would be if, let's say, one of the captives has a wealthy father or a relative that wants to redeem him for a lot of money, and it won't cause any, it won't incur any weight onto the tzibur. They're not going to have to redeem this person. What's the halacha? If you say it's because of duchke de tzibur, then fine, it's not going to affect the tzibur. But if you say because it might cause for future people that more captives, then even if someone wants to offer a lot of money, we're not going to let him because it's going to cause problems for everyone else. So the Gemara says, Tashema, come in here, we'll bring a raya. With the Levi Bar Darga, this individual, Parki Lebrate, he redeemed his daughter from captivity, but Tleser Alfi Dinrizav with 13,000 golden dinar. No, obviously, the reason of why you're not allowed to redeem for an inflated price, which is what he paid, is because of Duchka Ditzibura, where we can't impose this upon the populace. But he was not doing it. He was paying it himself. So that's why we let him do it. So on that, the Gemara says, Amabai. He says, no, it's not a raya. Uman le'melon de b'tzen chacham avid. Who said that what he did was according to the willingness of the sages? Maybe he did this without permission. For his daughter, he's going to go against the law. But maybe the law actually is that even if the father wants to pay, we don't let him. Because, yeah, you're going to be redeeming your daughter, but you know how many more captives are going to be taken now because of your selfish reasons, and we don't let you pay more than how much the value is, and therefore there's no raya from that incident. The next halacha in the Mishnah was that we don't help the captives escape because of rectification of the world. And he says, because of the tikkun of the captives themselves. So the Gemara asks, what's the difference when you're saying it's tikkun o'ilam or tikkun ha'shavuyin? So the Gemara says, the difference would be if there was only one captive. Where according to the Tanna Kamma, he's still concerned for tikkun o'ilam, for a general tikkun for the worldly affairs, because what's going to happen is, if we help one captive escape, the next time the captors take a captive, they're going to really put him into chains and painful, really locked up holding cells because they helped him escape. So they're going to put him in really terrible conditions, so we don't let anyone escape, even if it's only one captive, because it's going to cause terrible conditions for future captives. Whereas Reb Shimon wasn't concerned for that future tikkun olam. His whole concern was, if let's say there were 10 captives and you helped 5 of them escape, then they're going to be so upset that the 5 escape, they're going to torture the remaining captives. For those remaining captives, we don't help some of them escape. But regarding future incidents, Reb Shimon was not concerned, and therefore in such a case of only one captive, he would say you would help that captive escape. Now, the Gemara continued with a related incident due to the fact that that incident has an element of captivity. So the Gemara tells us that Bansei de Rav Nachman, the daughters of Rav Nachman, Bachashan Kedir B'Yadayu, they would stir a hot pot with their own hands. Now, whoever would see this, that fire wouldn't affect them, thought they must be righteous women, that how could they do such an incredible miracle? Now, Kasha Leila Rav Elish, this really bothered Rav Elish, because Ksiv, on the one hand, the Pasuk says in Kehelis, says, Adam Echad Mi Elef Metzasi, it says, one out of 1,000 men have I found that to be a righteous person, v'isha b'chol eilo lo mitzasi, and in those 1,000, I have not found even one woman to be a tzaddik. Now, Rav Elish was bothered by this. Ha'ikah b'ansi d'Rav Nachman. What are you talking about? We have all these daughters of Rav Nachman that they're all tzaddikas, because here they go, they're mixing their hand, the fire with their hands. They must be great tzaddikim. Now, garmalahu milsa. This caused for destiny to affect that actually v'shtabian. The daughters of Rav Nachman were taken into captivity. V'shtaboy ihu nami b'hadayu. And Rav Elish was taken into captivity with them by the same group of bandits. Now, yom echad, one day, have a yosef gabehu gavra. Rav Elish in captivity was together with this other individual, the have a yod b'lishna d'tzipari, that knew how to interpret the language of the birds. Asa urva v'kukarile. Now, a raven came and was talking to Rav Elish. So Amalei, Rav Elish said to that person, "My Kama, what is the raven saying?" So Amalei, that person said to him, "Elish barach, Elish barach, Elish flee, Elish flee." So Amas, Rav Elish said, "Na urva shikruhu, ravens are liars. V'lei semichna Allah, I'm not going to rely on him." As we know by the incident of Noach, where the raven wasn't trustworthy to fulfill his mission. Adahachi asa yoinav akukari. Now in the meantime, a dove came and started talking. So Amalei, so Rav Elish said to him, "My comrade, what's the dove saying?" Amalei said, Elish barach, flee Elish, flee Elish." Amar, he said, "Oh, Knesset Yisrael k'yoin misalyim. The Jewish people are compared to a dove, like the pasuk says in Shir Hashirim, Yoinasi tamasi, my faithful dove. Shema minas, Rav Elish said, must be misrachash linisa, must be that a miracle is going to happen to me." Amar, so he said, "Look, Ezel achsi bansi drav Nachman. Let me go ahead and see regarding the daughters of Rav Nachman, who were in captivity with him. Ikaimin beheminu sayu ahadrinu. If they maintain their faithfulness, I'm going to take them back with me because I know a miracle is going to happen with me, and I'm going to take them back with me." So Amr, he said to himself, "Look, nashi, women, call mili de islahu, whenever they have things to discuss, sadran lahadadi, they organize their things. In other words, they counsel together. But basically, in the laboratory, that's where they have all their real private discussions." So he went there. Shaminu dukamr, and he heard that they were saying, "Ade guvern, these men, our captors, are our men. They're our husbands. V'nardai, so too, in nardai, meaning our Jewish husbands that we had before we were taken in captivity, in nardai, were also guvern. They were also our husbands. In other words, what they were saying was we had husbands, and now we have other husbands, and we don't need our first husbands anymore because now we have new husbands. So lemalahu lishvu yaihu. So let's tell our captors that they should go far from here. That men shouldn't hear about that we're in captivity, and they're going to come to redeem us because we don't need to go back home anymore. We had those husbands, but now we have new husbands. Let's go far away, that we're not going to be removed from these new husbands. So Elish heard this, and obviously that means to say they haven't kept their faithfulness. So come, he got up, Arak, and he fled. Asa ihu vahu gavr. So him, Rav Elish, and that man, the one who understood the words of the language of the birds, they went and they fled together. Lididei Yisrachash Leinisa. For Rav Elish, a miracle ended up happening, which was of a b'mavr. He passed over on a boat over the water, and then his captors couldn't reach him anymore. But vahu gavr ashkachu v'katlu. But that man, they caught him and they killed him. So kihadrin v'asim. When Rav Elish came back from captivity and they came home, Amar, he said, Kihadrin is when the daughters of Rav Nachman came back, because they ended up being redeemed, actually, because the daughters of Rav Nachman and Basin, they came. Amr, he said, don't think that these are tzidkanias. Have a kobach and kidja b'chshav. It must be when they were mixing the hot pot with their beer hands, must be they were doing with some type of witchcraft. And I know because I was with them in captivity, and they weren't so faithful as I overheard from their conversation. And again, that's the story that the Gemara brings because of the element of captivity that there is in that story. Now the Gemara continues with the next Mishnah, again continuing on the theme of Tikkun Olam, of things that were put into place because of more general macro type of concerns, what can happen for the future Tikkun Olam, which is Ve'ein Loichkin Svarm Tfilin Mezuzos Min Oibdik Kacham. We don't purchase Sefer Torah, Tfilin, and Mezuzos from non-Jews. Yisrael Kadei Domain, more than what their value is. And the reason is we continue in Tamid Beis, Mimnei Tikkun Olam, because of rectification of the world, which is either because of the two reasons that we mentioned before, which is either because of Duch Kedisipur, because it's going to max out the Jewish people when they have to pay out all that money, or because we don't want to cause for the future, they're going to start stealing all our tefillin, all our Sefer Torah, and say, the Jewish people, they're going to give a lot of money. If we don't give them, they're not going to take. So if for either one of those two reasons, the Tikkun Olam is we can't overpay for the prices that they're selling us for the Sefer Torah, the tefillin, and the mezuzahs. Now, the Gemara makes an inference. Amalei Rav Budya L'Rav Ashi says, look, Yesra al kadei demein hu de'ein leikin. It sounds like that you can't purchase from the non-Jew, from the Sefer Torah and the Tefillin and Mezuzahs, if they're inflated in the price. Habechdei demein leikin. It sounds like, but if they sell it at sale value, then you could purchase from the non-Jew. Shema minosa says Rav Budya that you could infer that Sefer Torah shenimtza biyad eved kechavim, that a Sefer Torah which is found in the hands of a non-Jew who wants to sell it to the Jew, that karen bay, that you could read it and you could use it as a valid Sefer Torah. And we don't have to be concerned that maybe he wrote it for the purposes of idol worship, which is actually machlekes later on. Seemingly from our Mishnah, you can infer that there's no such a problem. So on that, the Gemara says, no. Dilma, maybe the deal that you're making for the Mishnah that says, but if it's being sold for its face value, then you could purchase from the non-Jew, is lignos. It means to say, then you could go ahead and bury it. And meaning to say that you don't leave it in the hands of a non-Jew because maybe it's a kosher sefer Torah and we don't want it in the hands of a non-Jew. But we still don't read from it. Rather, we put it into Geniza, again, because out of doubt that maybe it's not valid, but there's no raya from the Mishnah that you could read from it. Maybe you're actually purchasing it for Geniza purposes because maybe actually he did not write it for the purposes of a kosher sefer Torah, and maybe he did write it, let's say, for the purposes of avodas kechavim, of idol worship. So Amar Nachman says that Naktina, we have a tradition that these are the halachas regarding purchasing from unscrupulous individuals, people that are not necessarily a kosher, upstanding sefer, a scribe. As follows, Sefer Torah Shekhsavim Min, regarding a Torah scroll that was written by an apikoros, someone that doesn't believe in one word of the Torah, so then Yisarif, then you burn that Sefer Torah, because definitely it was written for idol worship, because this is not someone that believes in the Torah. If a non-Jew, just any non-Jew, writes it, then yigonis. As the Gemara later on will explain, then it's concealed, meaning it's buried. And nimtzu biyad, so that's if it's written by the min, by the apikoros, or the non-Jew. Let's say nimtzu biyad min. Let's say it's found in the possession of an apikoros, of someone that doesn't believe in the Torah. Then yigonis. Then it's actually concealed. Now the reason being is because maybe he wrote it, and if he wrote it, yes, we would burn it. But maybe he found it. Maybe a Jew had written it, and therefore it's kosher. So we can't just burn it, so then we bury it. If it's found in the possession of a non-Jew, let's say some non-Jew dies and they're going through his, and they find the Sefer Torah, so Amri lo yigani. So some say that you bury it, again out of doubt, because maybe he wrote it, and as we said, by a non-Jew, when he writes it, then we bury it. The Amri lo karmba, some say actually you could read from that Sefer Torah. The reason being is because they consider this what's known as a svek sveka. It's a double doubt, which you go leniently. And the reason being is because, A, first of all, maybe a Jew had written it. And even if you say if the non-Jew had written it, maybe he wrote it to sell it to a Jew, and he wrote it for kosher purposes and not to write it for idol worship purposes. So because there's a double doubt, we consider it valid, and it can be read from, again, that's the machlik, is do you bury it if you find it by the non-Jew, or can you read from it? Now, however, although one of the halachas Rav Nachman said was regarding a sefer Torah that a non-Jew wrote, is that it's buried, actually the Gemara brings three different versions of this halacha. Sefer Torah shekesav evikachavim, regarding a Torah scroll that was written by a non-Jew, we have Tani Chada Yisarf. One braisa says you burn it. V'tani Idach Yiganes, one says you bury it, again, as Rav Nachman had brought his tradition. And V'tani Idach Karim, by the other braisa, says you actually read from it. So the Gemara says, Loi Kash, it's not a difficulty, as if what's with these contradictory braises, because they're going like different Tanoic opinions. As the Gemara explains, Haditan Yisarv, the braise that says that you burn it, is Rebbe Lazar, he's going like Rebbe Lazar. The Amma that he says, the Mesechtes Chulin, on Daf Lamed Chesma Beis, regarding the halachas of Shechita, of slaughtering, he says, Stam Machshabes Evi Kachavim, the generic thought process of an idol worshipper, is la avoid is kachavim, is for idol worship. So when he just slaughters an animal, it must be not for Jewish purposes, it must be for idol worship purposes. And therefore, if he wrote a scroll, like Rabbi Lazar says, you're gonna burn it because it was written for avoid is kachavim. Now Bahadatan Yigani is the Brice that says that you bury it, is Hai Tana, who is going like the following Tana. The Tani Rav Amnuna Bered Rav Mipashroina, which is the name of a place, he taught the following Brice that says, Sefer Torah Tfilin Umazuzis, Shekesavan Min, that was written either by an Apikaris, or Umaster, was written by an informer, someone that is Malshin on Jewish people to the non-Jewish authorities, or Evi Kachavim Be'eved, or if it was written by a non-Jew, or by a slave, or Ish of a cotton, or by a woman, or by a minor, or V'kuti V'sal Mumer, or by a Kuti, or by a renegade Jew, Psulin, these Sefer Torah Tfilin Umazuzis are invalid. Shnem, because the Pasuk says in Devarim, it says Ukshartem, and then it says Uchsaftem, meaning that you should bind the tefillin on your hand, and it says you should write them. So the Drasha tells us, in comparing these two elements, is Kol Sheyeshne Bikshira, whoever ties on the tefillin, Yeshne Biksiva, he could write the tefillin. For Kol Sheyeshne Bikshira, Eina Biksiva, whoever doesn't tie the tefillin, doesn't write the tefillin. So therefore, that disqualifies a slave and a woman, because they don't tie the tefillin, because it's what's known as a mitzvah seshesh hazman geram, it's a time-bound mitzvah, because nighttime and Shabbos is not time of tefillin, so therefore they cannot write the tefillin. A kuti, according to this Tana, is what's called gerei arayos, they converted only because of fear of a lion, but they weren't true converts, and therefore they're not b'nei Yisrael to be keshira, to have kesiva. And also a mumer and a maser, although they're regular Jews, but they have thrown off the yoke of Torah on them, and they don't tie on the tefillin, so therefore they can't write the tefillin either. Now, so therefore, the Tana of this Braisa holds that when a non-Jew writes a Sefer Torah, writes tefillin, writes a mezuzah, that they're not valid to write it, because they're not in kshartim, so they don't have ksavtim, but he doesn't hold that you burn it, because it's not necessarily that he wrote it for avoid kachavim, he's just invalid, he can't write it, just like Yisrael Mumma wouldn't be able to write it, not because it's necessarily written for avoid kachavim, just because he's not b'nei kashiris, he's not b'nei kasiva. So that's the Tana holds that you would have to bury it. And that's what we said before, what would be the reason by the Sefer Torah that an Akam writes, is because he's not in the element of the Kiyum HaMitzvah, so he's not in the fulfillment of writing the mitzvah, like the Sefer Torah, Tefillin HaMezuzos. Now, Bahadur Tanya Karimbaya, and the third Braisa that says that you could even read from the Sefer Torah that a non-Jew wrote, is Hai Tana, who is going like the following Tana, the Tana like learn the Braisa. Leichin Svar min o'evdi kechav mechal makam. This Tana holds you could purchase scrolls from non-Jews anywhere. Ubavach yiksuvin kelchasna, as long as it was written according to the halacha of how the Tzura So'esius, as the Sefer Torah, has to be written. And actually, Maisib o'evdi kechav echad b'tzidon, there was actually an incident with one non-Jew in Tzidon, Shayukesiv Sram, who he would write these Torah scrolls. V'hitter, Rishim Gamliel said, you're allowed to buy from this non-Jew. So that's the opinion that holds that you could even read from the Sefer Torah that was written by a non-Jew. Now, the Gemara, however, once it introduces this third opinion, and Reb Shimon Gamliel said you could buy from him, the Gemara wonders, for Reb Shimon Gamliel, Ivud Lishman Bayi, the Gemara doesn't understand. Reb Shimon Gamliel is on record, as the Gemara will shortly quote, that holds that you have to tan the hide of the animal, which was used to make the parchment for the Torah scroll. Even that process, which is the earlier process of tanning the hide, he holds has to be done lishma, has to be done for the sake of being used as parchment for the Torah scroll. It can't just have been done and then decide to purchase it and use it to write a Sefer Torah. Ksiva lishman loy bayu? And what? And writing it, when you're actually writing the letters of the Oseus in the Sefer Torah, that doesn't have to be done for the sake of writing a valid Sefer Torah? In other words, a non-Jew, how do you know that he wrote it lishman? You don't know. So even though everything looks kosher, fine, but if he holds that Ibur has to be done lishma, which is there's a debate about that, and that he holds has to be lishma, so the writing of the letters don't have to be written lishma, which seemingly everyone agrees to that halacha, seemingly you would. So how could he say you could buy from a non-Jew? They're telling like, learn the Braisa. The Braisa says of tzipon, if someone covers tefillin with zahav, encases it in gold, not a case that you put the tefillin into, but the tefillin itself, or it's covered with the hide of a non-kosher animal skin, then pesulos, then the tefillin is going to be invalid, because as the pasuk says, Shmos Yud Gimel, that regarding tefillin, it's used the word beficha, that what the drasha, the Gemara tells us elsewhere, means to say that the tefillin have to be made out of something that's mutter beficha, that's permitted to be put into your mouth, which is food that's kosher. So therefore, gold is not valid, and neither is a non-kosher animal's hide valid. Whereas oy behemet tahira, but if it's the hide of a kosher animal, then that's ksheris, that's valid to be used to cover the parshis of the tefillin. Va'afa pishle ibn lishman, and the Tanna Kama says, even though the hide wasn't processed for the sake of being used for tefillin, it's okay. Whereas Reb Shimon Gamliel, he argues and he says, no, afilo oy behemet tahira psulais, even kosher animal hide is going to be invalid to be used to cover the tefillin, achayabdun lishman, until it's actually tanned and processed for the sake of the tefillin. So the Gemara wonders, how could he say that you buy from a non-Jew? And that's the third Tannaic opinion that says you could be karin bayu, you could buy it from a non-Jew. But even though everything looks kosher, but it wasn't necessarily written lishman. If he holds ibud needs lishma, then for sure the ksiva has to be lishma. So Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, he explains that beger shechazer lesurai, that incident where Shimon Gamliel allowed the Jews to buy from that non-Jew in Sidon, he actually was a convert. He was at one point a Jew who went back to his old ways, and he went back to be living as a non-Jew. Now, he knew all the Jewish laws, because for a period of time in his life, he was a full-fledged Jew. So he knows that the Sefer Torah has to be written Lishma. So although he's a non-Jew, that's not a problem, as this third Tannaic opinion holds. And the fact about Ksiva Lishma, he's writing it Lishma, he's even doing Ibud Lishma. So that's why it wasn't a problem how he let them buy from this, quote, non-Jew. Now the Gemara wonders, Lesuroi, could that really be the case, that it was a convert that went back to his old ways? Kolshkein, all the more so it should be invalid, because the Havalei Min, that makes him into Apikiris. Because a Ger, once he's a Ger, he's a full-fledged Jew. When he goes back to his old ways, although he converted at 20 and at 23, he went back to being a non-Jew, he's a Jew, there's no going back. So now that he threw off the yoke, he's actually an Apikiris. So you would have to burn it. So how can you say that he let them buy from this, quote, non-Jew, who should be considered apikaris? So Amar Vashi explains, no. Shechayz l'suri, why did he go back to living as a non-Jew? Mishum yira. He was afraid of his life, because the non-Jews were so incensed that one of them went and became a Jew. He was afraid for his life, so he had to go back to be living as a non-Jew. But not because he's an apikaris. Really, he would prefer to stay a Jew, but he had to go back and be a non-Jew, so he's not an apikaris. That's why he let them buy from him, because he's not an apikaris. He's just a regular non-Jew now. In other words, in that classification, he's not writing it for Avodas Kochavim purposes. He's writing it for the Jews. He's actually friends with the Jews. He can't be a Jew. So it's regarding that type of halacha where Shimon Gamliel said you could buy from him even if a non-Jew you actually could buy from, as long as it's ksiv lishma. And here this guy's writing it lishma because he knows all the Jewish law. So again, that's the source for these three different opinions. Are these three different tannaim regarding buying a Sefer Torah from a non-Jew? Either you have to burn it, or bury it, or actually you could even read from it. Now the Gemara goes back to explain the halacha of our Mishnah, Tana Rabban. We learned in the Braisa, which qualifies the halacha of our Mishnah, that although we learned in the Mishnah that you're not allowed to purchase from a non-Jew Sefer Torah, Tefillin, and Mezuzahs more than their value, the whole reason of that was only that the non-Jews shouldn't feel like, whoa, this is really worth it. Let me start stealing all the tefillin I could get from shuls, because of it's noticeable the inflated price he can get when they want to buy it back from him. But says the Braisa, a small amount, malin b'dmein ad kedei terapeik. You could increase the value just a little bit, like the amount of a terapeik, because that's not so obvious, so you could pay a little bit more. It just means that you can't really pay way over. So the Gemara says, my terapeik, what's the value of a terapeik? Rav Sheshes, it's istira, it's what's called a sela medina, which there were two types of sloim coins in Talmudic times, which was the general populace, the sela medina, and then there was the more noble type, which was the sela tsuri of Tyre, which was eight times the value. So this sela medina was like the value of a half a dinar, as the Gemara explains in Masechtas Ksubis. That's the amount that you could increase the value, that's not a problem. Now, however, the other way around, the Gemara illustrates with a story. Hahita Yasa, there was this certain Arab woman, the Aisi Chaisa, that she brought a small sack of the tefillah of tefillin, lekameid Abaye, in front of Abaye. So Amalas, Abaye said to this Arab woman, says, look, Yahavisli Resh, would you give me the pier, meaning for every pier of the tefillin, meaning the one of the head and of the arm, betamri, for a date? So Amalia Ziara, she was so full of venom and anger, that Shakla Shadisina Benara, she went and she threw the whole sack of tefillin into the river. So Amas Abaye said, Lo yiboyli lizalzaluni ba'apa kulihai. Said, I shouldn't have given her such a lowball figure. I shouldn't have undercut and degraded what she was trying to sell me so much, because that could cause the other type of effect. Meaning, although our Mishnah said, you're not allowed to weigh over buy, neither should you weigh under buy, because that might cause them to get upset and they're going to throw the whole thing, as in this incident, in the river, and thus causing the harm to all this tefillin. Now the Gemara continues with another Mishnah, again, this concept of tikkun olam, regarding the tikkun of the world, and therefore certain halachas come from that. So the Mishnah tells us, Hamitzias ishta mishum shemra. If someone divorces his wife because of a bad name that she has, meaning to say, there are rumors going around town that she was mizana, that she had an extramarital affair with another man, and because of those rumors, he says, you know what, I'm letting you go. So the Mishnah tells us, lo yachzer. He's not allowed to remarry her. Meaning generally, if someone could be machzik rishas, like when he divorced his wife, at a later point in time, when they have a change of heart, they could get remarried as long as she didn't marry someone else in the interim. In this case, he's not allowed to remarry her. So too, mishum neder. Let's say he divorces her because she took a neder, and he says, I can't deal with a woman that takes vows. Oh, she's prohibiting this on herself and this. He lets her go. The Mishnah says, lo yachzer, he's not allowed to remarry her, even if these two concerns why he divorced her turn out to be false, meaning the rumors turn out to have been lies, and the neder that she had taken, she ends up going to a chacham who permits her the neder. So what's the reason why can't he remarry her? So there's a machlokes amiram regarding the interpretation. There is an opinion that says what's called mishum kilkula. We're concerned that if he could remarry her at a later point in time, when she actually ends up marrying someone else and has children from him and so on, he's going to say, wait a second, if I had known that I could, that she's going to end up being mater her nether, or if I would find out that the rumors were false, I would never have divorced her. What that ends up making is that it was a false get. It wasn't a true gerushin. What turns out is that she was really never divorced. That means to say her new husband was an illegitimate relationship and all her children are mamzerim and so on. So therefore, that Amora interprets that the halacha is you can't remarry her. Because if you could, you might cause problems in the future if she marries someone else. Another Manda Amor interprets and says, no, it's a penalty. Now, it's actually a penalty on the woman. And the reason is because we don't want Jewish women to be parrots, to be overly excessive in these prohibited areas of Arayas and the Dharm, which means to say, if there's rumors about her and he's divorcing her for that, we say, that's it, you can't go back to your husband. Because we want, those are areas of major concern. A woman being mezana as an ashes ish is a big concern. And the dharm is also a very severe area of halacha. If that caused your husband to divorce you, we're penalizing you and you'll never be able to go back to your husband. That's the machlokes regarding this halacha of the Tanakhama. Now, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, he argues in the qualification of this halacha of a woman who made a neder, that when the husband divorces her, he can't remarry her. He says, Kol neder sheyadu b'rabim. Specifically, if it's a neder that was known by the masses, in other words, she made her neder in public, in front of the whole 20, 30 women, she said, you know what, I vow, this is forbidden on me, then is the halacha that if the husband divorces her, that lo yachzer. that he can't remarry her. The reason being is because a neder that was made in public, there's no hafara. The husband cannot nullify such a vow. Now, as Rashi explains, Rabbi Yehuda was not concerned for the Amaroic interpretation of Kilkel, of that maybe the husband later on will come and say that if I would have known that her neder is going to be permitted, I would never have divorced her. He's not concerned for that. Rather, his concern was, like the second Amar that we quoted, that we don't want Benois Yisrael to be parts in the dar. Now, therefore, if she makes her neder berabim, well, that's a big pirtza. She's publicizing and saying in front of many people, and that's making a big tumult, that she's making a neder, and that's something we don't want people to take lightly. So there is where we penalize her and says, you know what, you did this to yourself. You're making a major pirtza. We don't want that to be. If your husband's divorcing you, he can't remarry you anymore. But says Rabbi Yehuda, b'shelo yodu berabim, but if it was a neder that the people didn't know about it, she made it just by herself, where that's the type of a neder where the husband could be mefer. So there they didn't penalize her, and there actually the halacha is yachzer. Then it's not such a severe neder because it could be nullified. So then we said that even if the husband divorced her, Rabbi Yehuda holds that he could remarry her. That's Rabbi Yehuda's interpretation. Rabbi Meir, I mean, he gives a different qualification in this penalty of when the husband divorces her because of the neder that she took. He says, kol neder shetzarch chakiras chacham. Any neder to be permitted, if it requires the analysis of a sage, in other words, that she has to go in front of the sage to find some type of an opening of regret that she has regarding having made such a neder, and in other words, it's not a neder that the husband himself can nullify, then Rabbi Meir says, is the halacha of lo yachzer. Then the husband cannot remarry her. Now the reason is, as Rashi explains, because Rabbi Meir holds, actually like the first man de Amar, not like the second one. Not like Rabbi Yehuda was concerned with the second concern. Rabbi Meir is concerned with the first opinion that holds that the reason why we instituted this halacha that he can't remarry his gerusha is because of Kilkel. We're concerned at a later point in time what he's going to say. Now, therefore, when it's a neder that he himself cannot nullify, because it's, let's say, in a certain situation where only a chacham could find the Pesach, so since the sage could permit it, he could at a future time cause problems for the get that he had written to her after she had already married someone else. Because he's going to say, wait a second, had I known that a sage, I don't know what these Talmudic scholars have up their sleeves, if I would have known that he could permit it, I would never have divorced you. And therefore that comes out and it creates that the gerushin was never a gerushin, and that means to say she was living in sin all these years with this new husband. So Rabbi Meir says, if it's a type of a neder that requires the sage, you can't remarry her, because if you could, then he'll end up saying that I would have known that he could permit it, I would never have divorced, and that would cause the problems. But says Rameir, but if it's a type of a neder that she took that doesn't need the chacham to be matred, rather, he himself could be made for the neder, he himself could have nullified it, then actually yachzer, such a type of a neder, if she made and that's why he divorced her, he could remarry her. The reason being is because in such a type of case, the sages did not require her to be forbidden from him to remarry her, because in such a case, he cannot be makalkal her at a later point in time and say, had I known, etc., etc., because that's the type of a neder that was open and ready to be mufer. He could just be mefer, and he didn't. So that was his own prerogative. He can't say, oh, had I known, what do you mean, had you known? You had that option. And therefore, says Rabbi Meir, in that type of a case, the husband is permitted to remarry the woman that he divorced, because there's no concern about kilkel. Because what do you mean, you had you known, you had that option? Now, Amr Belazar, Lazar actually says seemingly the opposite of Rabbi Meir. He says, no, loy asru zeh, they did not make this case that you're discussing of a neder that requires chakiras chacham, that was only able within the framework of the sage to permit, that we made her forbidden to be taken back by her husband. He says, actually, it was only forbidden elab mipnei zeh. It was only forbidden because of the other case of when you don't need the chacham, when he could have done it himself. In other words, by Rabbi Lazar really holds, not like Rabbi Meir, says that in the case of when a sage was necessary to permit the neder, actually they were not concerned for kilkel. The reason being is because he cannot say, had I known that the chacham would be matured, I would never have divorced you. Because, as Rashi explains, there's something called anan sahadi. We testify, we know that a person would not want his wife to be degraded by pulling her through the court system and going in front of a sage to have to degrade herself and to go ahead and find an opening for her neder, and to go ahead and request that. So therefore, actually, He can't say, oh, had I known that a chacham could have been matirid, I would never have divorced. It's not true. You would not want your wife to go through that whole thing. And therefore, you can't claim had you known you would have done that. And therefore, actually, in such a case, Rabbi Elazar says, you really should be able to remarry the wife in such a case, because you would not have been able to make such a claim to be mekalkel at a future time. Now, however, says Rabbi Elazar, actually, because of the other case, which you hold is not a problem, I hold that actually is the main problem. Because of the case of a neder which does not need a chacham, but rather the husband himself could be made for the neder, that's the reason why we make her always forbidden to be taken back by her husband, so that he shouldn't say, oh, had I known that I could be made for, I didn't know that. Had I known I could be made for, I would never have divorced you. So because of that case, which could cause a problem for the future, says Rabbi Elazar, that's why even the case of when he couldn't have done it, which only the chacham could have done it, which again, that's actually a case that he really doesn't have a claim, had I known, because you would not have put her through that degrading situation of going in front of the chacham. But because we don't want to allow that one, because we might come to allow the case when he could have done it himself, which then he could claim that I didn't know that I could do it myself, and then he would end up causing her problems. That's where Belaza says that all the Nadarim are going to be forbidden for him to take her back if he divorced her because of that reason. Again, not like Remeir, who actually holds by the case of that you don't need Chakir's Chacham, he could remarry her, which Rabbi Elazar says, actually, no, that's the main one why all of them you can't take her back. Now, Amr Bisa Rabbi Huda, he concludes this Mishnah with, he says there was a Maisa B'Tzidon, there was an incident in displaced Tzidon, Be'echad Sha'amah Le'ishtad, regarding a person who told his wife, Koinim Im Einim Megarshech, I'm making a neder forbidding you from, there's going to be a neder between us, Im Einim Megarshech, if I don't divorce you. And he followed through on that threat, Begirsha, and he divorced her. And the sages permitted him to remarry her, which the Gemara is going to explain what is he saying and what's the chiddush in this. Why shouldn't he be able to remarry her? It's not her making the neder, it's him making the neder. He said there's going to be Isra no if I don't divorce her, and he did divorce her. And however, but that's what Rabbi Yisrael Behuda ends off, and the reason why he could remarry her is when they tikkun ha'olam. It's because of the tikkun ha'olam, which the Gemara is going to explain. Where is Tikkun HaOlam have anything to do with this halacha, and what's the chiddush in this halacha? Why would we think that the husband, because he made a neder of Isser Kainim, until he divorces her, and he did divorce her, why would we think that he can't be take back Machzik Rishasa, where we don't have the concerns that we had when, as the same as there was discussed in the first part of the Mishnah, of when the woman herself makes a neder?